Thank you, guys. Thank you, Robert. You look, two stools today. I have my choice. I feel like that Morgan & Morgan commercial where the guy's buying two treadmills. I should sit on this one for a while and then that one for a while. Thank you for coming, everyone. I say that every week because sometimes I'm amazed that you come back. But I do love working with John Simonson. I just want to say that because he is right up front with who he is and how he is, and I'm that way too. I tend, you know, I tell you before, my kids get together and joke about all the ways I've hurt myself because I'm clumsy. And I don't know what it is, but I've had two people ask. One person asked, is there a story behind that shirt because you wear it? And then someone said, did you really buy that or was that a gift? I don't know what that means. It worried me for a second, and then it didn't. I tell people it's a scratch and sniff. If you scratch one of the little fish, it'll smell like dead fish. You know me. You know, I've fallen off the stage before preaching. It's a thing. I'd love to be one of those eloquent preachers who walk gracefully up into the pulpit and give an oration. You know, that's a fancy preaching word. I've always struggled with the cliches of faith. I think it's because I was unchurched and I didn't learn the cliches of faith, you know, Jesus saves and some of those things. While they may be true, they can also be frustrating. I opened today with a story. I bumped into a young couple yesterday at the wharf, and it reminded me of about a 6 to 8 month window in every new relationship. Most of them are young relationships, because the time you're our age, if you are entering a new romantic relationship, you've learned to some degree. But I watched this young couple, and she was shopping, and he was just loving being there with her until she turned her back, and then he looked at me and rolled his eyes. And there's a window of about 8 months in every young relationship where men love to go to the mall. It lasts about 8 months. And women, you're not any better. There's a window of about 8 months in every relationship where you like football and baseball and just love to fish. I can remember my daughter coming in going, I'm going fishing today. And I'm like, really, you? No way. And then about 8 months into that, you begin to talk about how you've changed about all you're going to change. You sing that song. Wasn't it Olivia Newton-John that wrote that song, I Dishonestly Love You? I think that was it back then. Robert got it. He's my age. We're in Hebrews, chapter 11, 1 through 6. Show me the way. Yeah, right. Show me the way for about 8 months, and then I've changed about all I'm going to. Back in the old days, when I first started doing this, and I'll be 62 this year, so I've been around, and I started doing this when I was 19. They used to tell us, and I studied with people from other denominations as well, and it's pretty much the same. Take your first year, just get to know people. Take your second year and begin to introduce a few changes. In your third year, begin to change what you really want to change, and in your fourth year, get your packing done so you can leave. In the church growth movement, we began to study and realize you better change all you can in the first 18 months because you're going to hit that spot, just like in a young relationship, where people are going to go, I've changed all I'm going to. Anybody find that in your spiritual life as well, that you've changed about all you're going to? And I think one of the reasons we do that is because we're humans. We're just not that bright. Who said that? Yes. We're humans, and we tend to resist things that are good for us. Any of you heard the doctor say you need to lose a little weight, and you worked on that for about a week? You need to take some cholesterol medicine, but you don't believe in medicine. And men, here's your great downfall. Do you realize there's an age where you really shouldn't get on a ladder, and you passed it about 10 years ago? And some of you, oh, there you go. Yeah, you know, one of the things is anybody in the room a sinner? Is anybody next to you a sinner point? That's what we do. Hebrews begins like this. Faith, it is the reality of what we hope for. And it is the proof of what we don't see. Anybody can explain that? Faith is just something you hope for. And you don't see it. And if you're like me, and you need to know, that frustrates the daylights out of you. It just, what does that mean? And I think that's why some of us as believers go into the cliche zone. Well, you know, you just got to have faith. And then the unchurched person like me goes, what? What the heck does that mean? You just got to believe. Believe what? Well, if you have faith, you can move mountains. Be healed. Anybody remember that one? How about just pray about it? Usually when people tell the preacher they want him to pray about something, it means they want him to agree with them. Just pray about it, everyone. But most of you have lived long enough to realize that life is just not that neatly packaged, right? You've lived long enough to realize that the speed bumps in life are just a little bigger than it sounds like they should be in most church dialogues. We use phrases like get saved, get right, meet Jesus, accept Jesus, know Jesus, be forgiven. And that works really great in the beginning. Back in the day again, churches used to have revivals twice a year, not hoping to win the lost, but hoping to remind us of how much we need grace. And we'd bring in this barnstormer. I remember one, and he'd be preaching along, and then he would say this phrase, "Let me see if I have a few more pearls to cast." Now, revival preachers can say stuff like that. You know, you cast the pearls before the pigs. Most preachers can't say stuff like that. Clichés. We try to change for a while. Then we realize we just try to trust grace. We try to lose for a while, and then we just realize, try to lose weight for a while, and then we just realize we're just going to have to trust we don't have a heart attack. We try to slow down for a while, and then we realize we're too anxious to sit still. We just have to trust that things will go okay. And yet we know that's not rational thought. We understand that that's not right thinking. So I want to take us back to an idea of grace and faith. A grace and a faith that's very basic and very simple, and I think relatively easy to understand. Grace and faith fit together like puzzle pieces. They fit together like fingers that join and lock. And it's very hard to pull them apart. Do you know, anybody remember Red Rover? You know, as a child game, that was just a game. But as you got toward teenage, that could be a pretty brutal thing to do. People broke stuff playing that game sometimes. But if you held hands like this, it's not so hard to jerk it apart. But if they interlocked, it's very hard to pull apart. Thing I do with kids sometimes, it's you ask them if they can do that with their fingers, and then when they do, you grab it, then you can tickle them because they can't get out of that grip. Yeah, sadistic I am. Grace and faith fit together like two puzzle pieces. They become the interlocking source of strength for the maturing believer like this. Grace is the life-giving gift of God that washes our sins away and brings us into what we call good standing with the one who made us. You know that, don't you? Faith, then, is a state of being that trusts that God will overlook your oops and appreciate your efforts to do well. The Old Testament, the idea of sin had two concepts to it. One was the sin of the oops. That's a very theological Hebrew word. Everybody say it, oops. Anybody ever done something wrong and then you go, oops? I tend to do that out in public when I spill stuff on myself. Oops, that's my spiritual gift. The Old Testament had the concept of sin that was the oops, where you do something and then you go, ah, look what I did. But the other one was the sin of the upraised hand. And in the Old Testament, the way you made a vow, the way you signed a contract was you raised your right hand and you gave your word. And that was the sign to everyone out there that you had signed a contract, that you had given your word, that you had made a vow. And the Hebrews believed there was the sin of the upraised hand, where you raise your hand and you say, I have changed all I'm going to, God. You just got to take me like I am. And at that point, we negate our grace. Do you understand?
Well, you mean I'm not saved?
I'm not going there at all. But I'm saying there is a sense that when grace and faith couple, at the very root of all that we are is the opportunity to look into the eyes of God and hear God say, there you go. We'll fix that oops, won't we? It was by faith. They showed their faith, the elders. There was no Christ, there was no Bible, and yet they seemed to believe that God was with them, that God would guide them. There was a sense that by faith they believed that God was the creator of all things. It is our saying that we can trust God, that God brought everything into being, and I don't need to know how. I don't have to enter into arguments with how the world began or how it will end. You ever been in that class or that group or that discussion about the end of times? And everybody knows exactly what's going to happen next and what each part of the book of Revelation represents? I don't have to know that. God will show up when God shows up. End of sentence. Is it that easy? I remember being somewhere one time and fella had a young boy. I didn't have kids yet, so I didn't fully grasp it. But he told his kid, they were sitting on the front row, he goes, do a backflip off this chair. Well, the kid spun around and started, and Dad caught him just in the nick of time because the kid knew Dad would catch him. We adults, there is a humble state of faith that has a gracious respect for God's love for us and for all souls. Humble faith doesn't need to be bothered by the otherness of debate, criticism, or judgmentalism. For in our faith, when, as soon as we raise the hand and say, I've changed all I'm going to, the only next option we have is to find someone worse than us and say, I'm against that sin. But if we can keep ourselves humble, simple, basic, for a humble faith feels the gift of grace and senses a need to live it out. Thus things like Meals on Wheels. Yeah, one day, 2 days a month, you show up at 9, you cook some food, you take it to older people, and it's your way of saying, God, I got nothing to give but this. You see, the text will also tell us that Abraham obeyed by going out without knowing where he was going. Any of you guys do that? If I took you on a trip and didn't tell you where you were going, how many of you would go? For about 20 years in my career, I would take backpacking trips on the Appalachian Trail twice a year. Now, I started backpacking when I was about 12 with Boy Scouts. Any Boy Scouts in the house? Yeah. You remember the survival hike? When I was a kid, we got to go out for 2 nights with a match and a pocket knife. Probably someone was watching over us, but we didn't know that. And there's noises out there, guys. There's noises. But I would lead church backpacking trips. And the fascinating thing was, I had never been on the trail I was hiking on, but I knew how to hike. And so I would do my spiel at the church, and people would show up for the introductory meeting. And as soon as you took what we called the potty shovel out to show them, about half the group left. The other half left when they couldn't get their 50 questions answered. What are we going to do, and when are we going to stop, and where's going to be the water, and how are we going to do this, and how are we going to do that? Because they needed to know every minute detail of what was next. But I knew how to hike, but I'd never hiked there. I know how to keep you warm when it's cold. And I always hiked in October, November, or February, or March, or April. You know why? Why are you going in the cold, preacher? No bugs. No reptiles, bears are docile. You know? And if you're hiking in the Appalachian Trail, you definitely want the bears to be docile. Yeah. So if you will trust, you will listen, you will have a magnificent experience hiking with me. Abraham heard from God say, I will give you quite a place, but you're going to have to hike with me, and I'm not telling you where you're going, and I'm not telling you where you're going to eat, and I'm not going to tell you what's along the way. And that's why we believers get stumped at the speed bumps, at the diagnoses, where we fall off the edge and commit a sin that embarrasses us in public. When we act out and someone sees us, it cripples us because we have to know that we know that we know that we know, and it's hard to let go and just ride the journey of life. Pete Enns, in his book of The Sin of Certainty, I think it's up on the screen for you, says, when knowing what you believe is the non-negotiable center of true faith, then questions and self-examination pose a threat. One of the reasons the church becomes so critical of them is that it's hard to look at us. Part of the mystery of faith is that things in life don't always go well. And if you live long enough, you'll discover that. And yet, the simple part of faith is that God continually washes us of our oops. N.T. Wright says this, the resurrection of Jesus was the beginning of God's new project. Not to snatch people from earth into heaven like we like to preach, but to colonize the earth with the life of heaven. Your goal is not to be perfect. Your goal is not to know it all. Your goal is not to be right. Your goal is not even to be righteous. Your goal is to act like Jesus. Doesn't that sound simple? Act like Jesus. But that requires a state of being that looks at you. Richard Rohr says, I am who I am who I am. And for some unbelievable reason, God has chosen to love me. And when we can't fix it, and when we can't explain it, and when we can't control it, and when we can't understand it, we can only forgive it and let it go. Well, I don't understand how they could believe. Let it go. Well, I don't understand. Let it go. But I don't want to. I've changed all I'm going to. And yet you change every day. I have discovered, I think I have, I don't own a ladder. But I think if I did, I'd know better than to go up on the side of my house and onto the roof. AJ, do you know better than that? Wendy says no. Yeah, yeah. Mary, does he know better than that? Uh-uh. Yeah, yeah. Marilyn, does Dave know better than that? No. Dear God, we are a work in progress, aren't we? Oops. I still think I can. I am so amazing at tennis. Tom, did you hear that? Has anybody seen my picture on Facebook when I look like Andre Agassi? Yeah, have you seen that? Go to church's Facebook page. My Andre Agassi days are on there. Actually, it's a Photoshop, but it's pretty cool. I got some biceps in that picture, I got to tell you. I am so amazing. And I actually was kind of amazing until I played this 82-year-old man. And he spanked me. And by the end of the first match, not even set, first match, he was telling me what he was going to, and he said this, and I quote, "Now, son, this one's going to be underhanded." That's why you guard yourself against self-righteousness. Because you will get out there and you'll choke and you'll mess up and you'll oops. And on occasion, you'll raise your right hand and you'll say, I've changed all I'm going to, people. And every now and then, God will provide us an opportunity and we will humble ourselves. And we'll embarrass ourselves and we'll act out and we shouldn't. It's just, yeah, there I go. It's life. And ours is not to be a life of rightness It's our best attempt at righteousness. But when we act like Jesus, it's more about how we treat others than how we view ourselves. And so the last slide is faith. Is this a life that you would like to live? It's an interesting journey. It's a hike. And if you'd hiked with me on the Appalachian Trail, you would have seen some of the most extraordinary sights you could ever imagine. And you'd have the image that out of all of the Americans in our country, this many people have chosen to take the same path. And if you will take the Jesus life and focus more on not about what's wrong, but about who Jesus cared about, you will join a journey that will take you places that you cannot even imagine. And you will treasure the little moments where you sit with somebody. I did it Monday. I don't know if you know, and I meant to share this earlier and I didn't. Miss Charlene passed yesterday, 102 years old. I sat with her Monday and she joked about it. She said, "I'm driving them nuts, Bill." She calls me Bill. I said, "How are you doing that?" She said, "I'm making them promise to eat better." I'm making them. She said, "I tell them my deathbed wish is that you would take your medicine and eat better." And then she'd giggle. She said, "And they think they have to do it." Some people choose that journey to live like Jesus. And that's very different than being a righteous Christian. You see our communion liturgy on the thing for you. Join me. Oh God, all you who love God, come to the Lord's table. Are you in need to confess your sin? Then come on, eat at the Lord's table. If you wish to be at peace, you can come to God's table. For many are invited and many will join us. Pour out your Spirit on these gifts, God. And pour your Spirit on us. These are the gifts of the body and the blood of Christ. Pour out your Spirit on us. Somehow, through them, make us Christ's body alive in this world. Doesn't that sound like a fascinating journey? The Holy Meal, we don't care if you're Methodist. We just hope that you'll be on a journey seeking God. My colleague, Reverend Simonson, and I will be here. We will break the bread. Just so you know, we have a gluten-free option if you need that. And more of being a full-service church, if you are not quite ready with COVID and such, we have the what we affectionately call the to-go pack, and we can get you one of those. Some days the best thing you can do is laugh at yourself. Beats the heck out of crying, people. Learn to let go. Learn to laugh. We'll let this side come first. John, break the bread for us. You know, this is God's way throughout history of saying, "I pick you. I choose you." Thank you, John. I mess that up every time, people. This is God's way of saying, "You're the one. Just like you are. Just like you are, I pick you." And I think God says, "Let your soul be filled with awe. Because if you were the only one, I would still pick you." That's what God does in us, is God picks us. Well, we must remember that God picks every other soul on the planet. And sometimes the only opportunity they'll have to discover this faith is by looking at us. Not at our perfection, but rather at our flaws. But it's not the mistakes we make or the sins we commit, it's how we deal with them, how we live with them, how we move forward from them. And so, this is God's grace for us. This is the way God says, "You're the one, kid. I will never leave you. I will never betray you." It's a fascinating journey. It's one where God knows everything that we are, and we know that. We embrace that, and we own that. We are who we are, and God loves us anyway. For me, that changes how I look at the world and those around me. There we go, John. Good thing I work with him. And I don't have a clue most days, people. This is God's grace for us. Interestingly enough, it's tasty. It's filling. It's good for us. It is bread and it is juice. But that really doesn't matter, does it? In this moment, we are tasting the goodness of God. For whatever has come our way, God will not leave us. And God will give us the strength for that moment in time. What if it is more about how we live that out before others? Let's give it a try, see what happens. It's a hike. It's a trip. It's a place that we don't know how to get there. We just do the best we can. Yeah, that's part of it too. You want to put it in here, Miss Anna? There you go, sweetie. Good job. There you go. And God's grace is large. It overcomes the world that we live in. Ours is the kind of God that asks us to hold a four-week-old who doesn't have a home, to cook a meal for someone who can't get out. Some people need two. There we go. God's grace. I tell you what. John gives a big piece of bread because can you ever have enough?
Amen.
Thank you, John.
Friends, I'd like to ask that you stand and let's close together.
You give life, you are love, you bring light to the darkness. You give hope, you restore every heart.